hate your job, do you just stick with it because it pays the bills, but deep down, you wish you were doing something else? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with a guest this hour who says the fear of failure is less important than the fear of never accomplishing your dreams. And he'll offer some practical advice on how to turn our passions into a way to earn a living. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you would like to tell us about your dream job. Our guest is Ben Arment. He runs Dream Year, a coaching organization that helps people turn their dreams into a business. And he is the author of Dream Year, Make the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you so much for being with us. So if someone listening is hating their job right now, you want to tell them that they're not alone?
Boy, not only not alone, they are in the majority of people who really have a hard time at work. You know, there's a bit of a crisis in our jobs. I think that, nearly 70% of workers are just not engaged. They just do not enjoy their job. And, there's a statistic by CNBC that says that half of America hates their jobs. So, yeah, most people, it's drudgery. You know, they have to get through the day, and the 5 o'clock whistle blows or whatever time it is. There's such a huge relief to go back to being who they want to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like two lives.
Well, how do you suppose this happens? How do we, little kids, we want to be astronauts when we grow up or whatever the case may be, and then we end up in something that we hate, and we stick with it.
Well, I always say that, as we grow older, our dreams do not disappear. We simply trade them in for standards of living. So I think there comes a point when we see what other people have. They have the nice things. They have the vacations and the robust savings accounts, and it makes us adverse to risk, which is really how you bring your dream to life. It requires some risk in your life. I think for the most part, we prefer safety. We prefer the easier road. And oftentimes a job provides that. It's a safety net. It may not be what we love. It may not be something that we even like, but it's an easy, safe route to go. And, we can enjoy our jobs for a while, but eventually it becomes routine or it becomes drudgery, and we start thinking about the thing we wish we really could do.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you mean by dream year, the dream year that you're talking about when you encourage readers to take this leap.
Yeah, really it's about helping people turn their life around by figuring out what it is that they want to do and then formulating a plan for actually bringing it to life. And I've been coaching people for 5 years or so. I've discovered that it really does take a solid year to put everything in place. And, there's a lot of really introspection that needs to occur, understanding what you're good at, the things that you might be able to bring to the marketplace that have value. But then there's also practical steps that you have to take to actually launch it. And that includes, formulating the business model, coming up with your financial model, like what revenue is going to come in to replace your salary, what money is going to come in to sustain the organization. And then all the things that you need to do to launch it, be it from marketing to building your brand to creating your whole enterprise and growing it. So I've discovered that it takes a year really to get things turned around. A lot of people wish it were faster, but I think a year is a really great time period for that to happen.
Tell us about your own dream year.
Absolutely. This, I consider myself the first client. I had a job I just didn't love. It was tough going. I had you know, three little children at home, and I found that I was only seeing them for an hour each night before they went to bed. And then on weekends, you know, I just relished the opportunity to be with my family and to travel and to do exciting things. But throughout the week, I was really having a tough time. And it dawned on me that I had marketable skills. Certainly, I felt like I was employable. I felt like I could get a job. So I wondered, well, why couldn't I create a model where, in a sense, I hired myself, where I created the business model and hired myself as the first employee to bring it to life? And that's exactly what I did. I took the leap where I quit my job and I started pursuing what I really loved to do, which for me was to launch conferences and events. You know, it's something that I've always loved to do. And I built a business doing it. And it's really been an incredible thing. I don't encourage people who go through the Dream Year process to quit their jobs right away necessarily. Sometimes it takes putting some things in place first before you do that. But for me, it was the right step to take, and it really did pay off.
We are talking with Ben Arment. He runs Dream Year, a coaching organization that helps people turn their dreams into businesses or dream jobs. He is the author of Dream Year, Make the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love. And we're wondering if you've done anything like this before. Did you leave a job you considered kind of a dead-end job or a job that you were just working at to pay the bills and seek something, follow your dream, follow your passion? Did you end up doing something else? Let us know your story or let us know your question, and maybe Ben can help you make it a reality. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So how do we know, Ben, if we're in a good position to follow a dream, to work on our dream year?
I encourage everybody to find what I call their sweet spot. And if you can imagine a Venn diagram with four circles coming together, forming a sweet spot in the middle. Each of those circles represents something very important as you're seeking to launch this idea. The first thing is passion. What is it that you would do regardless of whether you were paid for it? What is that thing that you wake up every day and wish, if I could only do that, I would really be happy? The next thing is to identify what your giftedness is. What are your talents? You know, for someone who's a graphic designer, it's easy to know if you're talented at that by the work that you produce. But there's also less tangible skills, things like just being able to help people in administrative duties, understanding maybe intuitively what they need, and, you know, writing. There's a myriad of gifts that we could be good at. But what is the unique giftedness that you have? So understanding that. The third thing is knowing where there's demand. Is someone willing to pay you for it? Is there a market for it? And I think that's one of the most important ones, because sometimes we have ideas that are great to us. We love the idea, but there isn't anybody else out there that values it. So it doesn't mean we need to change what we're passionate about. It means that we need to find the right model to make it work. We need to figure out how to express it in such a way that someone really sees it as a great value. And then the fourth thing is your platform. You know, people have to know who you are. They have to know that you do that service, or you create that product, or you offer that particular offering. So your platform, sometimes it's your social media following. Other times it's the people in your life or your community. But there has to be a platform by which people know that you are offering this. So I encourage everyone who is in the Dream Year process to really look at those four key areas, to bolster the ones that they're weak in and to emphasize the ones that they have great strengths in.
Well, I kind of smiled when you said that, you know, my passion may not be necessarily, or I'm gifted, may not necessarily have a big demand. You know, I'm passionate for travel. But, you know, who's going to pay me to go to Hawaii and have fun?
That's true. That's true. A lot of times when people come into Dream Year, their dreams are more like just sort of, they want it to be a hobby that they get to do all the time. And unfortunately, you're right. People don't pay you to just do your dream. It has to be a dream that collides with the interests of other people. So, you know, a great example of that is there was a guy by the name of Andrew Mason in Chicago back in 2007. And he had this idea for a website that he could create whereby if enough people participated in each of the offers that he put on the website, then the project would happen. So initially he had volunteer projects, things like serving to clean up the local park or serving at a homeless shelter. And it was called The Point. And if enough people volunteered, the project would tip and it would happen. Well, when he started this, he couldn't get enough people to tip any of the projects. It just wasn't working. So he decided to take this concept, this idea, and translate it into the world of couponing. So he would offer buy one pizza, get another one free. Or he would go to the local tanning salon and get a half-price deal if enough people participated. And that website became known as Groupon, and it became the fastest-growing business in global history. So it was the same concept, but he needed to change it in order to align with what people really wanted from it.
We are talking with Ben Arment. He is the author of Dream Year, Make the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love. Would you like to do this? Have you done this? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What is your dream career? And have you or do you want to make it a reality? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you have a passion, a dream job that you just haven't figured out yet how to turn into a paycheck? Well, call in and ask your question of our guest, Ben Arment, who is the author of Dream Year, Making the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love. Ben runs Dream Year, a coaching organization that helps people turn their dreams into businesses. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Josh in North Prairie is with us first. Hi, Josh.
Morning.
Morning.
How are you doing this morning?
Pretty good.
Happy
Monday. Yeah. Are you working your dream job or have you yet to find it?
No, I'm back to the job that pays the bills during the week. I mean, like I say, I kind of find that in between, and a lot of people might have to work a lot harder to get there, you know. And basically, you know, 20 years ago, I decided I want to be a musician, and I don't want to have to work. Well, turns out you have to work to get to where you want to get to. But now I'm at my dream job. I'm a live sound engineer. I've done a lot of big shows. So, I mean, you know, you look back and you say, how did I do that? You know, you start small, you build it up little by little. You got to work to pay the bills, obviously. Everyone wants electricity, a house, place to call home. But you can't go on life being unhappy either. So you really have to try.
You know what, Josh? I'm just trying to clarify. So your dream job or your passion was being the musician, but that didn't pay the bills. However, sound engineering is paying the bills.
Absolutely.
Ah, I get it now.
Absolutely. It was easier to find a niche as an audio engineer rather than a musician. Everyone's the musician, but everyone needs an audio engineer. So when I was in a band, and I kept paying and kept paying and kept paying the sound guy. And then as a band member, you're not really making the big money like you think or like you're hoping. Well, guess who was always getting paid? So it just kind of, you know, and it just so happens, you know, growing up, I was definitely the pull apart the computers, the radios, hook up the car stereos. I mean, it was natural. It came natural. And I think that's part of it, too. You know, you're going to find something that you love and what comes natural. And the rest will really fall into place if you keep moving forward one foot in front of the other. It really will.
What I love about this, though, Josh, is that maybe it's not your initial dream to be the musician, but you're still around the musicians. Music, it's a part of the life, the career. You get to. Are you passionate about sound engineering?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm still a musician. I'm just not playing an instrument. My instrument's the speakers, the lights, the video, what everyone sees, you know.
Well, it sounds to me like that is the dream job, Ben. What do you think?
Josh, it's great to hear from you. I love that you can identify so clearly what your real passion is. It sounds like, you know, you found the thing that pays the bills. But let me ask you this. I mean, if you could be in a band or play music all the time, is that something you still wish you could do?
That's a hard question. I think now, because now this is starting to feel like work, because, you know, it's now I'm where I'm at, but now maybe my dream job would be being the musician instead of the song guy. Mm-hmm. You know, now maybe that's a different dream to now look forward to.
Yeah, what's old is new again.
I mean, I'm not one bit unhappy. I think, you know, I really am living the dream. Sure, you got to go to the job during the week, but I still like that job too, you know. I mean, I wouldn't work somewhere I absolutely despise. Life's too short.
Oh, now I'm confused again, Josh. So your full-time pay-the-bills job is not being the sound engineer. It's something else.
No, that is my full. My big pay in the bills is the music. I still have a couple extra bills with children, you know, so you still have to have that. That's only part-time, though. That's just 2 days a week.
Yeah. Well, so...
You know, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, I'm always out doing concerts.
But it's starting to feel a little bit more like work, Ben, Josh says. Well, let's just say that... you know, deep down inside, he really would like to be the person in the spotlight. What would you recommend generally for someone in Josh's position?
Well, sure. I think Josh put his finger on it when he said everybody wants to be the musician. That is the more glamorous of the roles that are out there. And when that's the case, when you've got, you know, competition all over the place with other people who are very talented doing what you want to do, the most important thing that you can do is find a way to differentiate yourself. And these are very large examples, but I give them because they're very clear examples. Cirque du Soleil was started by a guy by the name of Guy Laliberté, and he basically took the concept of the circus and he made it a theatrical experience. And it revolutionized the circus industry. Now circuses are trying to be like Cirque du Soleil. I think that the secret to Josh, you getting ahead and for you being able to maybe rekindle your passion for being a musician and to find that it's no longer drudgery would be to find a way to differentiate how you present yourself as a musician, maybe the kind of music that you play, and to find a way to really tap into something that people love but don't know it yet because they're not aware of it. So, you know, there's a band in Chicago, for example, called Muka Paza. And instead of just playing conventional instruments, they've added marching band instruments to the conventional instruments. And they have cheerleaders and baton twirlers. And it's become one of the most popular performing acts on Chicago's festival music stages. So, you know, it could be that there's something within you that, you know, you might have a passion for a particular band that's played in the past, and you might be able to create cover songs and emulate that band and create a real strong market share where there is none currently. I think the most important thing is to look at how to differentiate yourself. How can you be different than all the other musicians that are out there?
Thank you very much, Josh, for the call. And thanks for the experience, the example, and good luck to you with whatever you choose. What's wrong, Ben, with just, I don't know, working that job to pay the bills? Maybe you don't hate it with a passion, but, you know, it's not your dream job. But then, you know, maybe you're a musician and you're playing some weekend gigs and that's your hobby and that gives you joy. And why isn't that enough?
Well, you know, it is. It really is. The first, you know, words in the book that I've written state that if you're not frustrated with your current situation, there's really nothing that you can do to move toward a dream, and there's no reason to do that. I think this concept is really for people who are frustrated at what they're doing, and it becomes unbearable for them. That frustration is so important because it helps you identify what your dream is. You know, frustration is almost like a warning light. It's an alarm bell for something being missing in your life. And people oftentimes don't realize that frustration is a positive thing, but it tells you what your dream is. Typically, the thing that we complain about is the thing that we're gifted at because we have the eyes to see it. We see that there's a problem. And that's how it works in our own life. If we're coming home every day and we're just agonizing over, you know, the work that we're doing, it's a good sign that we're not in the right spot. And the second thing that's really helpful about that frustration is that it becomes fuel for us to actually pursue our dreams. It's really tough to bring that thing to life that we're dreaming about. And we're going to need that frustration to act as fuel to get us through the hard times of bringing it to life. So you're right, Joy. If someone is really happy with their jobs, this probably isn't the right time for them to be seeking something else.
Carrie in Augusta is with us now. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, good morning. I had a couple of thoughts as I've been listening. One is there was a phrase that I've heard many, many times that says, dream with your eyes open. And we took that to heart in 2006 as a family, and what we identified is our lifestyle. What was the lifestyle we craved? And we decided we really wanted to live on a hobby farm. And so we found a farm in western Wisconsin, and we moved from the Madison area of Wisconsin to that hobby farm without jobs. We identified exactly what we needed for funds or to meet our expenses, and we pursued our dream that way. So it was kind of the reverse psychology of working to live, but really making live be the component piece here. That work was just a means to that end.
Mm-hmm. And how's that going for you, Carrie?
It actually is going well. We live on a wonderful hobby farm. We have, you know, it's kind of a little dream. We have goats and an apple orchard. I run a barn sales in our 100-year-old barn. Have an antiques business on the side, but also have a job that brings in our health insurance. It covers our expenses, takes care of those things. And then the other piece that kind of just to add to that is sometimes I think we are passionate about our work, but not necessarily of the people we work with. And I think that's a really interesting component of this, is how to deal with that. If there might be a supervisor we may not quite understand, or possibly policies and procedures of a workplace that we may not think are fair or appropriate, you know, but we're passionate about the job we do. I think that's something else. So,
yeah, a couple of great points there. Let me go to the first one, though, and get Ben to react to. Carrie and her family changed lifestyle, and, you know, this hobby farm was pursuing a dream. What do you think of that?
Carrie, I'm really happy for you. It sounds like you've done something really wonderful. You've made it work. And you're able to articulate what you did very, very well. I think it's fantastic. And you're right. I think that sometimes the dream is circumstantial, that there are lifestyle sort of choices that we prefer over what we're experiencing at a job. And you're right. I think, you know, there was a statistic by USA Today that said that people say their biggest frustration at work is their boss. You know, it's the people that you work with that sometimes creates the problem. I think it's incredible what you've done. And I would say, I would ask this question to you, Carrie, if you were able to get rid of the job and just do the hobby farm, is that something you would want to do?
You know, I think she's left us already, Ben. So, but the it sounded like she might have. I'm just surmising here that there was a couple here, and one had a job for insurance purposes, and the other was able to. You know, and then there was a little antique hobby, antique business on the side as well. But in any case, What about, though, I don't think your book really deals with this, but let's say you're in your dream job, your dream career. It's what you love to do, but your coworkers and or your boss make it miserable. I mean, is there something you can do? You don't advise necessarily on how to change your current workplace to make it better.
Well, you know, you're right. Like, if you can't change some of those factors, you know, it's a matter of, do you have the ability to persevere, stick it out, you know, and just to be able to do what you love. But if those things aren't ever going to change, the question is, can you do that same work, but do it for yourself? Can you create the model whereby you do that exact same work, but it's under different circumstances? I think people oftentimes view their life as, I need a job because it comes with insurance and it comes with these benefits. And really, at the end of the day, all of that just sort of amounts to a number that we get. If we were to take our insurance costs, we were to take our salary and add it up together, what is that number that you would need to replace? And I think oftentimes, if we were to just take some time to work on formulating a plan to replace it, we could do it. We would surprise ourselves.
Jeff in Wapaka is with us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, good morning.
Yes,
so
good morning.
I've been trying to think of how to tell the story so it makes sense. So basically, when I got out of high school, I was a musician and I loved to play music. So I decided to go to school for music and make a career out of it. And I did that and successfully got out and taught music lessons and played and everything and was making a living at that. Well, fast forward 20 years, and I find myself sitting on an airplane, not working as a musician, but sitting in first class next to someone who looked like a musician. You can kind of pick them out in first class, but I don't generally talk to people and pick up conversations when I'm sitting there. So about halfway through the flight, the gentleman looks at me and says, "You look really familiar." He says, "I don't really usually do this, but you look familiar to me." So I said, "Are you a musician?" He said, "Yes," and I asked him where he went to school, and turns out we both went to school there at the same time. And he's the guitar player for a band who is really a household name. And we got to talking about our experiences going to school for music and pursuing our dream. And we both had the same feeling that when we tried to turn our dream or our love into our job, it took all the fun out of it. And he said the same thing that I said, the only time I play music now is when I'm performing on stage. I'm just bored with it now. It's my job.
Oh.
And I was wondering what your guest had to say about the potential for, you know, kind of wrecking your love.
Ben?
Well, yeah, Jeff, that's a great point. And, you know, pursuing our dreams brings a lot of hardship with it as well. I think it's a matter of choosing the lesser of, you know, two evils. I would want to ask your friend that you met on the plane, is there something else that you wish you could do? Is there another job you wish that you were in? That's an important question, because if he were to say, no, at the end of the day, I'd rather be doing this, it could just mean that he needs to find some ways to re-inject some passion, some excitement into what he does. One of the principles of this book is that once you create the idea, it's not like you can just pursue that dream and keep it as is for a long period of time. There's a lot of things that happen when you pursue a dream and it becomes successful. First of all, there's competition that comes in. People emulate what you do. Sometimes it's just repeating something over and over again. So one of my encouragements is to continue adjusting and tweaking the model so that it continues to stay fresh and continues to stay exciting. And particularly if you're in a field where there are competitors rising up, you have to adjust your model in order to keep ahead of the competitors. Otherwise, they're going to pass you. They're going to take your market share. And I think this applies for that question as well, Jeff. I think that we have to continue adjusting and tweaking and changing things as we go in order to keep that passion fresh and alive.
So Jeff, you say you're in the same boat, though. You are a musician, and it feels more like work and not necessarily you're not as passionate about it anymore?
Oh, well, oddly enough, I'm in the same boat that Josh was earlier. So I worked as a musician for a while and found that, you know, it really wasn't all that much fun, and it didn't pay the bills very well. And and I design sound systems and acoustic spaces for a living. So basically a sound engineer. So that's my full-time job now.
I think that's just amazing that we had two musicians who were passionate about music and decided that being the sound engineer was a way to stay close to it, but also pay the bills. Interesting. So are you going to tell us the name of the band that that your airplane seatmate was from?
I thought about it, but I really don't think I should, since it's a band everybody knows, and I don't want to be putting words into his mouth, especially since I had to paraphrase a two-hour conversation into 10 seconds or so.
That's okay. I was just looking for some juicy gossip, but thank you very much for sharing your story with us. Let's go next to Linda in Madison. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I kind of fall into that category where I love what I'm doing, but I could tweak it because I see it going down another path. In college, I originally studied to be a nurse, but when it came to doing the practical hospital clinicals, I failed miserably. And instead of leaving school, I decided, well, the second favorite thing that I liked studying was the child development classes. So I got my degree in that, and I've been very happy with that. For 30 years, I've been either working directly with floating in daycare centers or doing what I've been doing for the last 5 years, which is an attendant on the school buses for the Madison School District, which I love dearly. I work with kids of all ages, and I found
Linda, I'm sorry, because we're coming close to break, I just kind of, so what is it, are you doing your dream job?
I found that now in my daily life that I am really good at modeling healthy habits to my coworkers, and I could see taking that teaching aspect and people aspect and being a wellness coach, maybe. I just am not sure how to go in that direction.
Yeah, so she considers maybe being a wellness coach might be something that she would be, that she would love, Ben. Maybe you can just kind of walk us through very briefly what you might have Linda do.
Well, sure, Linda, it's great to hear from you. I think the first question to ask yourself is, what would people be willing to pay for? Now, certainly, you're going to have to get some education and some classes and maybe a certification in something, which is something it sounds like you are fully capable of doing. I think the most important question, though, is what would people be willing to pay for? Is it nutritional supplements? Is it some other product that you could offer them? Or is it purely just the coaching? I would say for you, it's important to look at what I call a portfolio of revenue, meaning your revenue may not come from just one source. It may not just be the coaching. It may be that you become a distributor of nutritional supplements or something like that that goes along with your passion for wellness. So I don't know the field all that well, but I'd encourage you to think about where all those revenue sources could come from. And it's okay that there would be multiple of them. There could be 5 or 6 things that make up your income.
We are talking with Ben Arment. He runs Dream Year, a coaching organization that helps people turn their dreams into businesses. He is the author of Dream Year, Make the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love. We wonder if you work to live or live to work, whether you have found your dream job or are working on it. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with the author of Dream Year, Make the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question for our guest, Ben Arment, who is a job coach. He runs Dream Year, a coaching organization that helps people turn their dreams into businesses. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, you You write that one key element to making the leap to following your dream is deciding which fear is more important. What do you mean by that, Ben?
Well, there is not just one fear within us. Most people think, oh, it's me against my fear of failure, and I've got to overcome that somehow. Well, that is a daunting challenge. It's really hard to overcome our fears. So I encourage people to think about the other fear that they have within them, which is the fear of never having tried at all, or the fear of insignificance, or going through life and not doing the thing that we're not only that we love, but the thing that we were put on this earth to do. And so I encourage people to cultivate and to really give attention to that fear of regret. And I find that for most people, if they really think about it, coming to the end of their life and not having tried the things that they were really passionate about, but that is a greater fear to have. So if we don't choose one of those fears, one will be chosen for us, and it is always the fear of failure.
Let's go next to Sandra, who has my question. But Sandra, where are you from?
Coleman, Wisconsin.
I still didn't hear it.
Coleman, Wisconsin.
All right, Coleman, okay, go ahead.
Yes, I travel a lot, not for business, but leisure. And I just want to get paid for it now. I love traveling. I've been around the world. I just want to change it a little bit where I can get an income from it.
No, that's one of my passions, and we talked about that at the very top of this hour, Ben. Is there a way that we can develop our love, our passion for travel, and make it some sort of paying career? Ben, are you there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Joy. I dropped off for just a moment. Would you mind repeating that? I apologize.
So Sandra and I both are passionate about travel. I mentioned at the top of the hour, you know, I love to travel, but you know, who's going to pay me to go to Hawaii? Well, she wants to know who's going to pay her to go to Hawaii or to travel the world. Is there a way to, you know, that there might be some, what should Sandra consider?
There are a lot of people who love to travel. I'm one of those people as well. And I love to do it with my family. So when I left my job, the first thing I thought about is how can I construct my revenue source to come in such a way that it did not require me to be physically present in anybody's office. And so for me, you know, that was easy to do because I love putting on events. I didn't put conferences on in the city where I lived. I put them on in Chicago and in New York and Nashville. And so I didn't have to live in any of those places. The team that I have working for me, they're all on contract. They're not full-time employees. And so they all live. They're all virtual employees that live in other cities as well. I would say, is there a job that you can construct for yourself where you're not required to be physically present in someone's office? Can it be something where you work from home? And if able to work from home, can you also work from Germany? would it work out that way for someone? Now, if you want your income to come specifically from the travel industry, you want it to be travel related, then I would say you have to go through an exercise that every single person in our junior coaching has to go through, which is you have to formulate an idea model, or another way to say that is a business model. So could it come from travel journalism? Could you begin writing about you know, different parts of the country for a particular publication or resource? Or is there something that you can do by way of you know, working in the travel industry, like become, you know, work as a flight attendant, or work you know, I believe it's Southwest that has guest services, people who work from their own homes. So is there something that you can do that does not require you to be in the office and allows you to travel? So I hope that helps, one of those two directions.
Thanks, Sandra. Good luck. Dave in Madison is with us now. Hello, Dave.
Hi there.
Hello, go ahead.
So, well, I was agreeing with Ben that you have to sometimes retune your dream. Well, when I was in high school, I always wanted to be a singer. I took various jobs and ended up singing locally where I was in Chicago and then traveling. Then an opportunity came to be in the theater business in a place called Branson, Missouri. So I went there and lived that dream for 20 years, raised 10 grandchildren. Some of them were on the show, actually. But then competition increased in Branson, and I decided to go back on the road, still doing what I love to do. But now I've traveled about 44 states in the last 3 years, and still doing what I love to do, just had to retune the dream a little bit.
Wonderful, Dave. So what kind of show do you do?
Well, I started out almost 50 years ago as an Elvis impersonator and branched out to include characters like Dean Martin, Roy Orbison, Tom Jones, but also do educational programs for libraries all over the country as Mark Twain and Abe Lincoln.
Oh, how cool. How cool is that, Ben?
It sounds amazing. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, so what was the what kind of tweaking did you have to do, Dave?
Well, going from traveling on the road to being in one place in Branson, Missouri, which is a tourist destination, which has a lot of shows. There was 24 shows when I started in 94, and now there's 140 shows, which is why I had to retune my dream to be able to survive doing what I do. I just travel all over the country right now.
Yeah. So can you give us a Mark Twain quote or an Elvis quote before you go?
Well, Mark Twain might say, I can't make up my mind whether the world is being run by smart people who are putting us on or idiots who really mean it.
Thank you, Dave. That is great. Good luck to you. Let's see, we have another Dave in Madison with us now. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Joy. I'm really enjoying the show this morning, and it's resonating because I've started to do more international work, and through some volunteer programs with, for example, U.S. Agency for International Development, and can use some of the expertise I've developed. I was in Africa twice last year. I'll go back. And you're able to then get a lot of opportunities to start your own private businesses or, you know, whatever you want to do. But it gives you that experience and helps you get past that really important point of fear. And I think that is a critical issue.
Yep. You agree, Ben?
I do. I do. Dave, what was that point of overcoming fear for you?
Well, part of it is leaving the comfort of, your established location and your house. I've got kids. They're a little older now. And so, when you just, it's sort of like practice makes perfect. If you're not trying to do different things and sort of stepping outside of your own comfort zone, you end up never doing that. And so they're small steps. And once you get started on it, you're realizing it's not quite as scary. And there was a quote that I heard. It's somebody had said, boy, I've lived through so many horrible things, and some of them actually happened. And so much of that is in our minds that prevents us from visualizing where we want to go and actually getting there.
Yeah, we're really good at rehearsing our worst-case scenario in our minds, and it keeps us from pursuing our dream. But oftentimes, our worst-case scenario never happens, and if it does, sometimes it's just the reduction of our standard of living that we may have to sell the second car or, downsize the house. But they're not fatal errors. They are things that we can survive. And at the end of the day, it is worth it to pursue the things that we are passionate about and the things that we love. Fear diminishes with repeated exposure. You're absolutely right, Dave. When you start taking those steps toward your dream, things happen. Good things happen. And the fear begins to dissipate the more exposure that we have to it.
Talk some, before we end the hour here, about some other dreams that you have seen people successfully pursue.
Yeah, there's a gal who's who was in Dreamear, I believe, 2 years ago. And she didn't think that she had a dream that she could turn into a business. She really felt like she'd spent all of her life assisting other executives as an administrative assistant. And she thought, what in the world can I do to build my own business? And as we began to explore her passions and her gifts, we realized that she was brilliant at administrative duties and doing what she called the dirty work of the organization, the things that nobody else wanted to do. And so we put together a plan for her to launch a business called Dirty Work. And Katie, her name is, she's actually from Wisconsin. She did an amazing job of structuring several packages that she could offer to CEOs or thought leaders or businesses, where she provided them with contracted administrative services. And now she's got a full roster of clients. She's able to do what she loves, and she's able to help so many people, all from her own home office in Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, good for her. Good for her. Now let me ask on this is for a friend, really. A lot of times people say, I have a friend who, and it's really them, but this is really a friend who wants to help people. She wants to go pick up their groceries if they need a hand. She wants to, come over and do a chore at someone's house, an elderly or disabled person, perhaps. She wants to help people maybe make a decision that, you know, help them go get their taxes done or whatever. She wants to be a helper. And it sounds like a wonderful volunteer opportunity. But what about making a living doing something like that? Her business model is people can give me a donation if they think I've done a good job. She's got a big heart.
Yeah, she sounds like a wonderful person. And, you know, I think at first glance, it sounds like, boy, who would ever pay me to do that full time? I think there's a way, though. I think there's a way to do it. One way would be to give an organized structure to those tasks. Let it fall within a brand or an organization. So she may need to start a nonprofit that's called Helping Hands or something like that. And it's a donor model that comes from people who may not need her services, but see that it meets a huge need for people who are really struggling to look after themselves. So it may be elderly people or people with disabilities. And she could collect donations from other people to do the work for those who can't provide for themselves. The other thing is, you know, if the people are under any kind of state subsidies or assistance, it could be that she may qualify for grant money to be able to come in and help people with those needs. And, of course, another business model to approach is people are really busy these days. They have busy jobs. They have kids. They have full lifestyles. So is there a professional service that she could provide to be kind of an on-call or contracted virtual assistant for families that really just need one other person to help, you know, make life more manageable? But it comes down to her putting that list of tasks, putting those services under a brand that would appeal to people. I love the idea.
I do too. Now I'm hopeful for Marcia. I'll tell her to give you a call, Ben. But in our final minute, is there something we can do today to start living the dream?
Yes, I think the first thing to do is to come up with a to-do list of things that would help us get to our dream. A lot of times, we're so confused by what we want to do, it's a mystery to us. Well, we have to break that mystery into actionable steps. So what are the to-do list items that you can put down on a piece of paper to achieve it? That's the first thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Joy.
Ben Arment is the author of Dream Year: Make the Leap from a Job You Hate to a Life You Love. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Justin Williams for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.